welcome to the Ogletree Deacons Podcast, a brief discussion of legal issues and practical insights. Please note that the information in this podcast is for informational purposes only and is not intended or to be construed as legal advice. We hope that you enjoy the program.
I am Kenya Johnson, Senior Counsel in Philadelphia and Chair of the Diversity and Inclusion Practice Group. Our Diversity and Inclusion, or D&I, practice works to support employers of all size and industry in their efforts to have a legally compliant, less risk-prone, strategic, and impactful diversity and inclusion initiative. I am excited to facilitate today's discussion as part of our ongoing Diversity and Inclusion Practice Group podcast series. Today, we are highlighting ways that employers across the world are working to create respectful workplaces and some of the issues that they are facing through and beyond this global coronavirus pandemic. I'm happy to be joined by Daniela McGugan, a partner in our UK or London office. Daniela is a member of our diversity and inclusion group, and she regularly counsels clients on the laws, work culture, and policies needed to create respectful workplaces, among other matters. Daniela's expertise is in high demand, and she recently authored a ready-to-go model global respectful workplace policy template. Hopefully I got that right. As part of our firm's D&I legal surveys, model policies, and compliance toolkit that we make available to clients. So welcome, Daniela.
Thank you, Kimya.
So glad to have you. Daniela, when we talk about a respectful workplace, what do you mean by that?
It's a really good question, and it's a question that I get asked quite a lot, actually, because there's no legal definition out there for the term respectful workplace. So really, when we consider the word respect, we think about it on a human level, and it can bring many different words to the forefront of our minds. Generally, most people will consider words such as tolerance, empathy, patience, kindness, acknowledgement, and appreciation. And they're all basic human values that we should all strive to abide by in our everyday lives. And we all know the benefits of a diverse workforce, or certainly we hope we do. And a diverse workplace comprises of colleagues who are different to ourselves, be that by race, religion, culture, age, sexuality, and so on. And in order to work together effectively, there must be mutual respect. After all, we spend so much time at work, and someone once said to me, how we spend our days is how we spend our lives. So as a minimum standard, and I do emphasise the word minimum, my understanding of what a respectful workplace is it's a place where every individual is entitled to be treated with dignity and respect whilst at work. And that really matters whether or not it is required by law. And mandating this minimum standard, I believe, and communicating the message well within the workplace really does reap rewards, because a happy and respectful workforce tends to be a loyal and productive one.
Absolutely. And we are certainly living in disruptive times right now, and divisive times in many ways. And we are seeing these disruptions and divisions play out in our workplaces every day and all across the world. So one question that I had, Daniela, are there differing views of what is a respectful, you talked about valuing, or even inclusive workplace that employers with a global workforce, so employers who have workplaces outside of the United States, are their views of what this respectful or valuing or inclusive workplace looks like or things that they should be mindful of?
Sure. Well, at the end of the day, the world is a huge place, and more and more now, employers have a global presence, so it's far beyond the geographical restrictions that they may have historically been used to. And sometimes that can be very intimidating when you're trying to implement a common standard across a workforce that's scattered far and wide across the globe. But the good news is, and certainly when we're talking about respectful principles, is that generally, no, the underlying principles remain the same wherever in the world you are. Mm-hmm. And I always think if an employer is at the stage where they already recognize that a respectful workplace policy is a good idea, then the corporate buy-in is already there, and that's half of the battle. The challenge tends to be, on a global scale, the implementation of the principles and getting positive communication out there. Now, of course, when you're looking at anything on a global scale, it would be wrong of me to imply that it's completely straightforward. There will always be local laws and cultural differences that need to be borne in mind, and they must be and should be noted and acknowledged in any global written policy. But overall, the messaging is the same, regardless of language or geographical borders. And in fact, I would stress that when you're looking at implementing any global policy, consistency and communication and messaging is key to the successful implementation of global values. Because there's absolutely no point whatsoever in mandating that employees should be respectful in one geographical location of the business and then not applying the same principles and behaviours in another global location. Equally, I believe that seniority and job role should play absolutely no part whatsoever in the applicability of respectful principles. All employees, regardless of role or status, should receive exactly the same messaging and training within any global framework.
Now, that's interesting, because often when we talk about diversity, folks hone in on that, and they hone in on this concept of difference. And certainly, particularly when we're talking about a global workforce, there are certainly cultural and regional, country and even local differences. But I think what you were saying around ensuring consistency, at least consistency in the value, it sounds like the values that employers are looking to communicate and implement are not changing, but those are consistent values even across these differences. So how would you suggest that an employer go about implementing, so creating a respectful workplace? What should they be thinking about or doing to see this respectful workplace, this respectful workplace culture come about?
Well, the first thing I would do is to take a step back and look at the positives. So I would look at what the business already does well and who the key stakeholders and champions of those successful initiatives are within the business already. For example, the fact that a business is looking at respectful workplace as a principle would suggest that there may already be a diversity and inclusion initiative underway. So for example, are there already groups within the business that support particular job groups, such as women, for example, or ethnic minorities? If there's not, then I would suggest that that perhaps may be a separate initiative for consideration that the business should consider straight away. But if there are, and I would hope that there are, because, you know, if they are looking at respectful workplace, that suggests that there's already a positive initiative out there. Then if there are already stakeholders who are engaged in the diversity and inclusion space, use those people to the best of their ability. Bring them together into a project workforce that's focused on trying to get respectful workplace principles in place and getting a good cohesive steering group together to try and implement that and to spread the message on a global basis. I always think it's very, very powerful when colleagues and peers influence each other within a workplace, rather than using a top-down corporate introduction of rules that can sometimes appear insincere and a bit of a tick box exercise, rather than a truly powerful and genuine cultural message. And I think once that core project group is identified, then you can work with that group of people and map out what messaging the business wants to deliver, both on a voluntary basis, but also to ensure compliance with its global legal obligations, as there's no getting away from it that there are global differences in different locations from a legal point of view that do need to be adhered with. And then that messaging should be contained and set out, if possible, within a really clear and coherent, well-written global respectful workplace policy.
Yeah, so I think you really struck a tone with me. And when we're talking about respectful workplaces, or frankly, the workplace period, at the end of the day, what we're talking about are our people. And the various people within our workplace are bringing already a plethora of experiences and views and lenses, all of which are really great resources for any employer that's looking to harness their experience and their insights in a way that advances the business, but also sets the type of inclusive work culture that we're talking about. But you did often, you know, mention that in addition to what I say is the people component, there are, you know, compliance and legal obligations as well. And I preface that you have drafted many times, but at least for our firm, you have drafted a global model policy. So why don't we talk a little bit about that? When we're talking about respectful workplace as a policy, what are some of the decision points or things that employers should be working through when they are trying to build a cohesive and consistent policy that is well understood and can be implemented, frankly, across the world?
A really good policy will start out covering the basics. And the basics will be issues such as what constitutes a protected characteristic. On a global basis, there are slight variations to which groups of people are protected by legislation. However, I would caveat that with the general principles remain the same. Prohibited conduct, bullying and harassment, sexual harassment, workplace violence, and also issues surrounding retaliation and victimization for those who, you know, raise their hand and bring forward a complaint. So they're all fairly common themes that apply regardless of the geographical location that you're considering. But there are slight variations, but a good global policy will deal with them on a general level, but also make it clear where there are particular legislation differences. They will flag those in the policy. Where it becomes a little bit more difficult and tricky, and certainly on a global level, is if a business is seeking to go that little bit further to place restrictions on issues such as consensual behaviour. So, for example, consensual behaviour would cover restrictions on individuals having relationships at work. Now, many companies will use policies like that to prohibit or impose restrictions on certain consensual relationships. So, for example, there may be a prohibition on relationships between supervisors and subordinates, and or require their disclosure, for example. And such restrictions are subject to applicable law. Many non-US jurisdictions don't allow employers to prohibit consensual conduct. So there needs to be a balance struck on a global basis in terms of what approach is the company going to take and how do you deal with that in various locations. And the more prohibitive the company is on consensual conduct, the more likely it is to get pushback in those jurisdictions where employee consultation, for example, would be required before implementation. So that takes you back to the mapping phase, where I mentioned the importance of having a really good project group working on the implementation and the drafting of a good policy. Because all these sorts of issues with guidance and experience can be really debated at that initial planning stage to find out, you know, what the company wants its approach to be, using the parameters of the law and what is and isn't permitted in certain locations to drive forward its culture and the behaviours that it expects of its workforce on particular topics. The other issue that I see quite a bit is issues relating to reporting and investigations. That can also trigger some decision points that the company needs to consider. Some policies, for example, require all individuals to report misconduct, whatever that misconduct relates to. But realistically, sometimes on a practical level, victims of bullying and harassment often don't report it. And they won't report it just because somebody's telling them that they should. So a broad reporting requirement can sometimes burden less powerful individuals in the organisation who don't feel they have a voice or that their voice may not be listened to. And that can sometimes allow for more powerful individuals to abuse their power by disciplining someone for a failure to report when actually that individual didn't feel they were able to. So it's a tricky one trying to get the balance, but that's where the buy-in from the project steering group that you have and trying to get as much employee input into your policy drafting really helps, because you can see the operational and the, I suppose, the human element of the difficulties that can be brought to the fore when people are dealing with these very emotional topics when you're looking at issues such as respect in the workplace, because that's a human, it's a human topic, and it's very often fueled by emotion because somebody has had something done to them, or they perceive that something has been done to them on a very personal level. Global laws can also differ depending on whether or not an individual has to bring a comprehensive grievance, or whether an investigation procedure is required, whether an individual has the right to bring a work colleague or a trade union representative with them to various meetings, whether or not due process has to be followed, that an accused individual has the right to receive in writing full details of their accusations, and so on and so forth. So there can be slight variations to the legal requirements in different locations as well. But a well put together policy can overcome those difficulties by ensuring that consistent approach is taken, and perhaps, you know, you go above the minimum standard in some locations to ensure that you're getting a consistent standard across all locations. So it is certainly achievable. It's not without its difficulties in certain areas, but good planning and you know, discussion at the early stages mean that you overcome those hurdles through a healthy debate and ensuring that you're protecting the company brand on the issues that matter most.
Yeah, I don't think that most people recognize the complexity of policy creation or workplace policy creation, the myriad of laws and legal or compliance obligations. What I have found is sometimes, at least here in the United States, there are some folks, when we say respectful workplace policy, they may be conflating it with a respectful workplace statement or a proclamation of value. And that's not really what we're talking about here. I also find that when we're talking about respectful workplace policy, there's just so many components to it. So here in the United States, we often will equate respectful workplace policy. People think of EEO, so Equal Employment Opportunity Policy, statements about protected characteristics and who is a protected class, as you will, under the law, such as Title VII. But it is so much more than that. There are more components. So what was really striking to me is how complex this investigation, but this drafting and ultimately the communication may be around these policies, and particularly when you're thinking with a global mindset, which adds another level of complexity. So we're not just talking about, I think, as you said, protected characteristics, but you're defining prohibited conduct. You're talking about potentially bullying, harassment. You're talking about sexual harassment. You're talking about workplace violence. You're talking about retaliation. And you're talking about your complaint reporting process. That's a lot. And there are a lot of issues that attend to that to deal with.
Kimmy, I was just going to say, you're absolutely right. There is an awful lot that can be covered within the respectful workplace policy. But I think probably the overarching benefit of the policy is less about the laws and the regulations. It really does drive the workplace culture. Mm-hmm. And I think if you get the messaging right and you get the cultural values right, it goes to the core of the nature and the spirit that exists within a workforce. And really, businesses that do best and have the most productive culture will be those that not only have a good, respectful workplace policy, but they live by it and abide by it. And every employee is aware of it, and not only aware that it exists, but they know what it says.
Absolutely. We often say that policies are the proclamations of who we are and what we stand for. And frankly, by converse, what we will not stand for. So what a great point you have made there. So understanding some of the complexities, and you've really given us many ideas and issues to chew on and to think about. But what are some of the roadblocks or some of the challenges, at least that you've seen and experienced, to employers being able to create a respectful workplace, you know, roadblocks or challenges to creating a respectful workplace policy and ultimately being able to enforce it?
I think the initial buy-in from the business is probably where the initial roadblock can come in. I think once you have corporate buy-in, you get momentum, and generally speaking, most people, once they can see the benefits of a good, respectful workplace policy, will support it and will be on board with it. Sometimes encouraging employers to see the benefit of a respectful workplace policy can be challenging. And it depends on the nature of the business and who the key stakeholders that need to be convinced are. But very often, you can show metrics that directly equate to why a good respectful workplace policy is a positive, tangible product that can add value to a business. Because culturally, if you have happy employees and a happy workforce, which generally follows from a respectful workforce, you will have higher staff retention rates. You will have lower sickness absence. You will have lower litigation. You will be seen as an employer of choice in the marketplace. You will be seen to perform better than your competitors in your particular marketplace. So there are key economic drivers why having a good respectful workplace policy and culture in place is a good idea. So that's the initial hurdle, and I would urge anyone who's finding that they have pushback from their organization to look at those areas and get some tangible metrics to show why perhaps you have high levels of sickness absence, perhaps you've seen you've had more litigation than you perhaps would have expected, and is fundamentally there an issue relating to workplace culture and respect at work that may be driving those particular poor behaviours. Once you've got that and you've got the corporate buy-in, then good planning and a good project team, as I've mentioned before, is really all that's required to get a good respectful workplace policy off the ground. The challenge then comes once you've got it in place in implementing it and getting the right communications in place. And training around this is very, very important. Now, I know that in some locations, training is mandatory. For example, in New York, issues Yes. such as sexual harassment, for example, there is a mandatory training requirement. But that is not necessarily the case globally. So you do need to ensure on a global basis that there is consistency of approach in order to protect the reputation of the company brand. So a really good training and communications program is really important, because at the end of the day, there is absolutely no point in having a really great written policy if nobody knows it's there, or worse still, they know it's there, but they don't follow it. Yeah. So all areas of the business need to know that the policy exists, and not only that, but that that's the minimum standard that's expected. And if those standards aren't followed, then poor behaviours will have serious consequences. And just in terms of communications and implementation, as part of that strategy, when I've been working with previous clients, we've used roadshows or e-learning or, you know, workshops. They're all methods that I've seen and used successfully to facilitate the implementation of a good global respectful workplace policy.
Absolutely. And, you know, as we are grappling with the myriad of issues that have been presented through this global coronavirus pandemic, I guess the question might be a simple one, in the sense that, do you think that this global coronavirus pandemic has impacted efforts to create a respectful workplace?
You say it's a simple question. I actually think it's quite a difficult question. I would hope, and I would sincerely hope, that the desire and effort from those who wish to create a respectful workplace remains the same. However, there is absolutely no doubt that the global pandemic has placed social and economic pressures on people and businesses that simply didn't exist 6 months ago. Economic and budget pressures may mean that some employers feel that a respectful workplace initiative is a nice to have rather than a necessity. And I can absolutely see how that might be a persuasive argument. However, in a climate where employees may be being asked to do more for less, you know, some are still doing the same hours, but for less pay, they've had to take a pay cut, or employees are working more flexibly, you know, they're working from home whilst juggling with childcare commitments, for example. I would argue that the cultural and behavioural policies within the workplace are actually more important now than they've ever been before. And I really do believe that the strength of a business lies with its people, and a valued and respected individual will be much more inclined to go the extra mile in these difficult and challenging times than one who feels that their employer just doesn't care.
I think that is a quote that we can end on. You said the strength of a business lies with its people, and a valued and respected person will be much more inclined to go the extra mile than one who feels that their employer just doesn't care. So, Daniela, this has been a wonderful and insightful conversation. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Kimya.
Thank you for joining us on the Ogletree Deacons podcast. You can subscribe to our podcasts on iTunes or through your favorite podcast service. And remember, the information in this podcast is for informational purposes only and is not intended or to be construed as legal advice.